last year, the year before, I went to Las Vegas, and I was there, and a fellow that I had talked to originally from Australia was there in Las Vegas, and that was really great seeing him, you know. And also, like in England, when they start setting up their hotline or their, you know, their telephone, right, they called me one day, and they said, hello, someone told me that we should call you. What we're doing is we're setting up our telephone service, and we need someone to keep talking on the other end, and would you keep talking to us? And I thought, my God, that's Jesus alive to hear this. You know, I mean, Jimmy was originally from Scotland, so I mean, that was, you know, so much of this growing, you know, period. He had always wanted to go back to Scotland and visit down there, but, you know, there was a lot of growing. There was also a period where the people had come over from, he talks about all these things on the tapes that I have, you know, but like, let's just use an example, like way over in the Andes or et cetera, you know, there was some people who had come to America, and then when they went back, they were going back in the plane, and they had NA things, and then they got scared because it's like death if you're an addict over where they were going. So they threw it overboard out of the plane into the jungle, you know. So we have literature all over. But it's a lot of that. I just. When people try to ask me to pinpoint exact dates, it's just like it was all happening.
One of the things that I think that's great that I really got turned on with up in Pennsylvania when they were talking about this is that each region, I guess now, is starting to do their own history, right? So when all that's compiled and comes together with what you folks are doing and the people up in Pennsylvania are doing, then questions like that will be answered, you know, because I think, you know, people, hell, they come from their area and so what happened would be real nice when they open that up. Oh, my God, I didn't know that, you know, coming up in the future, you'll have all those questions.
I'd like to say also, for example, like there were two people that really got things going in Ohio originally, you know, not just one person there, you know. And I'd like to say that originally I was born in Ohio and I was raised until I was 14 in Michigan, so I'm not really from the West per se, but yet I was from the West, so I'm not just, you know, I want to be a little bit partial to the West, you know, but still, yeah, I love it.
Fred, I'm panic. You talked about something you were sharing, and it's like something that whenever I read any sort of summaries of our history, it talks about like a 4-month period where there was like, you know, we say 53, and yet sometime was it, what was that period in 1959? That was where you were talking about? The 59 or 60 where there was just Jimmy and Sylvia left. What is that? I mean, nobody ever talked about that anywhere, and I wonder, you know, I mean.
Yeah, well, I'm not exactly sure what the exact date is, okay? Like I say, because all that stuff is down, and for me to go back over all that stuff again.
Well, about Sylvia then, you know. Like we talk about Jimmy, you know, he's one of
the
Sylvia Webster.
Yeah.
You know, she, I guess, is one of the founding people from that period on. When did she get clean? And you know, because, like, you hear a lot about the man of NA. This is, like, you know, it's a real honest question. You hear a lot about, because, like, Jimmy Kennett, you hear about different other people, Jack and the different people, but you don't really hear too much. But it's about the, like, stuff for, like, you and tracing back, like, Fearful Mother and stuff. What about her, whatever, you know what I mean? Because you were saying, like, she's never really touched on anything I've ever been able to read about this.
See, those really were good. I mean, that's a fantastic question, because, you know, in the early days of NA, they used to flat say, girls don't make it. And, I mean, it was just, even a few of them out of the early days, they just, they kind of flim-flammed around, but never made it. You know, there was just a couple of them that made it up until about the middle 60s or so. Then they began to, you know, have some adequate sobriety representation from some women, you know. And but I think, once again, my answer to that has to be because I've seen a lot of these minutes. I mean, lots of pieces of paper have been flying around here for the last few years. But I think that when the book's done, you're going to find a lot of those names listed, and you'll be able to see how many times their name were listed and so forth, so you can draw kind of your own conclusions that, like, well, Sylvia Wexler was around for a few years. And you know, one of the things that I need to say at this time, too, is that, you know, outside of our fellowship, there's a real need for anonymity. But inside our fellowship, you know, my name is Bill Beck. My name is not Bill B. You know what I mean? And it causes, I mean, even all these years, people ask, hey, do you know Joe? I don't know if I know Joe. Do I know Joe? I know 1,000 Joes. You know what I mean, right? And then I find out I knew some guy for 20 years, you know. And here I was talking like a buffoon to somebody. Do I know, you know? So I think that it's kind of important, maybe even in this book, to put those names like that, you know? I mean, especially after people are dead, you know, what difference does it make, you know? Now, I mean, to go out and put it in the New York Times or on TV, that's another story, but... like I said, my name is Bill Beck. I'm an addict, and I'm not ashamed of it. You know, I didn't have any anonymity when I was out in the streets. You know, believe me. You know. Jimmy Kennett, you know.
Tom, and I'm an addict.
Hi,
my family. You people have been involved with the Embassy of Narcotics Anonymous, and... about its formative years, giving your life, giving your life to the growth of this program. What direction would you like to see this book go? What's your wildest dreams for the future?
Well, I personally would like to see this book do exactly what they're talking about. I think it should be kind of NA comes of age. I see a need for a book for Jimmy Kennan, you know, that's kind of like the most unforgettable character I ever knew, you know, and I'm pointing that phrase out of the Reader's Digest. But, you know, and you said it's like we gave our lives to Narcotics Anonymous, and I have to say this, it's no, it's Narcotics Anonymous gave me life, and that's why I'm here, and if it wasn't for you people, I wouldn't be here. So it's kind of like I'm a parasite, you know, hanging on yet today, you know. I mean, I just like to see what's happening continue to happen, and I do know that that there should probably even be a third book, which is a combination book of Jimmy and the history, but most definitely one about Jimmy, one history, and one probably hooking the two together, you know. I know Betty has some views on that, so she probably wants to put her two cents worth in on that.
Well, I want to say, first of all, this is embarrassing. I wrote the, I typed out the first world directory. Here I am, I'm trying to remember dates and everything, you know, but a lot of stuff has gone down through the years, you know. But a lot of those, you know, like was asked about the names of people and, you know, who all and exactly, well, you know, all that is down the record, and I have all that. And, oh, I wanted to say also, like, putting dates down as far as when, you know, a lot of times we would be just typing, like, well, I have to think of myself, right? I'd be typing away and I'd forget to put down the date, you know. But there's a lot of, like, forms, they, you know, where people would be sending in letters and everything, so that would fill in along that, too. As far as the book, you know, well, we'll talk on the thing of life. For me, well, I'd like to see the history where these people who really, you know, given the recognition that started it, you know, the people that are dead, and et cetera, and that really get it going. I would like to see some togetherness from this. I think that there's still more states that need to be involved, and there's plenty of people in California that are completely being left out of this, but they, you know, they don't have any idea of what's really going on. And I'd like to see them involved, some of them whether they want to or not. I'd like to see them involved, and, because they were involved. You know, they are part of the history. But I'd like to see some togetherness of it. And oh, one more thing, just one more thing. It wasn't too long ago, in the area that I live, someone said, oh yeah, you know, in the old days, they used to drag people in and put them on their couch. And I thought, what is this, old days? Yeah. What did they mean by that? You know, people aren't bringing people in and having, you know, so I don't know. I listen to people with all the recovery houses and so many meetings and everything that is kind of like, there's not a lot of the work, the togetherness. So I hope that somehow or the other there gets to be more of that.
Father Dan brought up something last night about oral history and written history. I get real intimidated. Even years ago when we were writing basic text on things that we don't like rejection, you know. And Jimmy used to tell me, don't let the dogs get you down. And this is like a positive reinforcement when I'm around, you know, so much spirit, strength, and hope. Do we dare to put some of these things on paper? You know, the oral history is becoming a part of the material, you know. And that's one thing that I tend to get scared of, be intimidated from. And it has kept me from a lot of the work that I feel like I could have done even years ago. To get rid of some of the intimidation, what do you think that, do we dare to put some of these, like a thread on Jimmy's life, you know, a bull taking out a $100,000 insurance policy when he felt like he was threatened because of the basic test that he was pushing, me pulling things out from under him when I sent a letter to all the RSRs in the United States because I was being a political puppet, unknown to myself. You know, these are mistakes that I can admit today, but do we dare put some of these things in writing, you know, and some of the hurt that Jimmy experienced because he shared that personally with me, you know, some of those things in New York in 1983. And some of the, you know, the beauty of it all. I wonder, just like, you know, some of us advocate, well, let's put the cart before the horse. No, we got to have our commas and our books and everything just right before we present it to the public. It about killed me years ago. And so I was big on TI. Why are we still so afraid of an 800 hotline number? You know that cocaine hotline number years ago? That helped NA grow a lot. But my God, can you imagine on national TV, drug problem, call NA. 1-800. All Jimmy would do was send the starter kit and tell somebody how to start a meeting because it's that damn simple. You know? And we tend to complicate, like you were saying long ago, Cindy. And, you know, it's like, how does some of us continue to stay around and not be intimidated and kind of push back? Because I'll still hear things in Birmingham like,
well, that's the way they did it years ago in Atlanta. This is not Atlanta.
I understand spiritual principles and group consciousness never changes. And so, you know, I'm still having a hard time putting things in perspective and being a part of and not a part from. Thank you.
Well, I think that what you have to think about is that the truth shall set you free. And, you know, in fact, as I was talking to Betty yesterday about this kind of a thing, and I'll give you an example of oral history, but you see, it's not hard to weed the bullshit out of the roses if you know the difference between a rose and bullshit, right? I mean, it's like obviously the rose is that green leafy thing with a beautiful flower on it and the bullshit stinks, right? So, there are things, I mean right now things are going down on tape and they're going to be transcribed, right? And it was many things that went down on tape. And I don't think you have to be afraid of that kind of stuff. Like, there was a, if you pardon my expression, because I'm an addict, I'm going to say it like it is, but there was a jerk-off that showed up somewhere down the line there, and you know, some dinner, and he began to tell about the story of NA and how the Department of Corrections asked him to start NA. You know what I mean? And he goes on for this whole hour thing, and everybody went home from the dinner and went, wow, what a fucking fruitcake this guy was, you know what I mean, right? And here all of a sudden, somebody hands me a piece of paper off of a transcribed tape, you know, of this Jack P-head, you know, and that's exactly where it lied. I mean, it was just, well, I mean, they knew it was bullshit then, and it's bullshit now, except it's part of the thing, man. Somebody came along, he was invited to a dinner, he told his story, there was another guy called, I mean, and this guy's really famous in California, Cy Nails used to go around telling everybody he was the founder of NA. Well, he didn't come around until about 6 years after the program was started, or some several years later, and went for a very short time to NA and then sat over in the Radford Street AA clubhouse and told everybody how he started NA for a substantive amount of years until he died trying to claw another man's eyes out in a clubhouse, you know. And so who the hell knows why people do that? But that's part of that BS, and you can smell it. And when you see and you hear everything else, those little pieces will get shoved aside or deleted, or else they'll be written in and people can draw their own conclusions. You understand what I'm saying? So I don't think we need to fear those things. And we are addicts, and you know, this is not an organization for Sunday school teachers.
No, he's answering your question.
And most of us, you know, understand that addicts do a lot of weird and strange and sundry things. You understand? And there's been a few people that have been wrapped upside the head, and there's been a few gunshots that have flown around. And I don't think anybody expects any different than to hear about. Fact is that we just wrote it like we were all a bunch of Sunday school teachers. The new people coming along will probably be a little apprehensive as to whether or not we were a viable fellowship or society, you know. So I'm for, hey, let's let it all hang out. And how in the hell are you going to get this without some oral communication? I mean, this is what's going down right now.
say? Fred Addict.
Fred.
I have a question, because you've addressed this in your speaking. Like, I live in South Florida, raised with Narcotics Anonymous. I've only ever seen one case that Jimmy Kay spoke on, Jimmy Kenny spoke on. How are we ever going to get this information? Where can we get copies of these tapes to hear this oral history? And I just want to be able to hear it. I can come to my own conclusions. I'm an addict. I believe the loving, caring God expresses himself, you know? Are they available somewhere? Because, like, it seems like this is like they're, like, hiding it in a way. And it's just, you know, I mean, the one tape I heard changed my life. You know, I mean, in different tapes I hear it from around, and it's like, seems like it's like almost like you can't get to hear experience, strength, and hope a lot of times. Just a question.
Okay. Well,
the
World Service Office has tapes, you know, some tapes, okay? And for some reason, all of a sudden, the tapes just aren't being listed, you know? So from what I understand, now I'm just telling you what I've heard and what I've, you know, something that actually happened, that evidently they've been shelved, you know? And for a while we did this with Jack Lilly's tape too, and they shelved that. And I have a lot of the tapes, but you know, I have, with the things that I have to be very careful, you know, because when they were coming into our home before, they were stealing things from us, different people in the fellowship. And if this is going to go to the fellowship, it's got that, you know, whoever comes into my home, I've got to be able to trust them and hold it by it, you know, that it's going to be all right. It's not going to disappear again. So, but there are other tapes. There's more tapes. The office has some, plus I have.
Let me ask.
And there's a video tape.
Yeah, I want to ask Bill. Didn't I see some of Jimmy's tapes listed on that stuff that you've got up in PA? Yeah, so there's a few that's available through him.
We used to take the tape recorder around and tape different people. You know, Jimmy spoke on different tapes on that, you know. Pardon? Yeah,
Why don't
you come up to the...
It's not only Jimmy that's like...
There's other people, and
I've never been able to find, you know, I mean, I hear that it's supposed to be out there somewhere, but I mean, I'm not asking for originals or anything. I'd be real happy with any sort of copy, you know, and I understand, like, the principle of... You know, I mean, I don't know. I guess I'm an addict, and I just don't, I'm not afraid of, like, hearing something. I mean, actually, I came here to get clean. And, I mean, just, like, where are those tapes of, like, Sylvia or Jack or, you know, I mean, because, like, I know there's, like, these few tapes that seem to be unavailable.
Yeah, there's a reel, and that you get, you know, like, I got different people together. Like that, you know, I thought, well, maybe we'll get something going here. In fact, when Jimmy was dying, he asked certain people to help get, you know, his story written. You know, he did things. I'm losing track. So I got people together. And you remember Billy, were you at one of the meetings at the house in Garden Grove? And...
Well, pissed you off.
Yeah, I got pissed off at him. Everyone's going to tell Bill off. but it seems like the person who offered to help make the tapes wanted to take the tapes into another town and made copies of these tapes and give them back to me when she got through with them, but she couldn't work on them all the time. And I said, well, I think that I should take these tapes and be there and you make the copies and then I'll take them back. And no, she didn't feel that that was right, you know, that she couldn't do it that way. And another girl was going to help write Jimmy's story, but she wanted to take all the papers to New York. And, you know, and this is a girl that has a bad heart. She could have dropped dead, and all these records could have been left in New York. And so each time I seem to run up against a wall as far as where this can be done. Now, Billy and Carl have called me at different times and we've talked on the phone and this kind of got things, you know, to where we were talking about things. And I don't know how this book's going to turn out. I have no idea. You know, I can pray and hope God that will guide this book, you know. And I hope that, you know, all of us together will make sure that this is done, you know.
What he was asking about, though, was the availability of some tapes. And, you know, see, some of the problem, I think, is that a lot of the taping that was done in those days weren't, this is like pre-cassette, you know. It was like these big reel tapes. And so, this is a question to you. Is some of this, like, maybe also a financial burden on you? I see this as a total project of having to get things, have a recording done, things done in such a manner that it's a protected situation so that things aren't lost. Is that kind of what I hear you saying? Is it?
Well, it runs into many areas, okay? I was approached, first of all, as far as case, the 1983 New York Convention tape that was done. You know, I received a letter when I was in Garden Grove from the World Service Office, and it was worded in such a way that it said, would I please sign the release that was there signing over that tape to the World Service Office, and anything pertaining to that tape. Now, anything pertaining, Jimmy talked about many things, you know. And so I talked to people with social disabilities. No. You know? And also I was approached by someone from the World Service Office and said, Betty, where is the dubbing machine that belonged to the World Service Office? Now, this is a while after you know, out there, you know. And I said, well, I haven't got it. I don't know what's... And they said, oh, yeah, well, Jimmy had it. And I said, I beg your pardon. And so I said, you can look at what I have here. So he looked in my garage, looked around. He said, I can't find it, but it disappeared. Jimmy had it. Well, the last time that the dubbing machine was seen was in Sun Valley, on Vineland Boulevard, and you could walk in the front door, it was on the right-hand corner, and they were doing taping there. They had, you know, they were making tapes. In fact, Jimmy and I went to GEMCO at that time. There was a GEMCO.
You need to qualify that place was a World Service Office.
Right, World Service Office, okay, in Sun Valley. And so when we had nothing, you know, for us to make tapes on, to just keep continuing. Right? We went to GEMCO department store and we bought the dubbing machine and we did our own taping right at the house, okay? So whatever trip some people get on, I know, but I can only share my experience that, you know, that was our experience. And I have boxes and boxes of tapes, okay? And I have files. You know, and I have things that are put away in security boxes because, you know, okay. Anybody else want to know? I'm getting very weak.
Any other questions?
Phyllis, want to know anything?
Thanks, Dave. Thanks.
Cindy, you want to say something?
Yeah, I just want to say one last thing. You know, the guy that asked the question, he asked about oral versus written history. I don't think we'll have much history if we don't go with some oral history here. Because addicts back in the days that Bill came around and all of that didn't tend to sit down and write a lot about this.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, we've got to have some trust in some people that are be able to verbalize what happened, because there isn't that much written history if you want the history from the beginning. Yeah, in the last few years when, like in 1981, when they said, we want every word at the conference on that paper, I typed every word. The ends, the horseshit, the, all that stuff, it was in there. The pause, it was in there. Because we wanted that every word. But up until that point in time, I mean, even with the WSC, every word is not going to be written down somewhere. We've got to have some trust in these people that were here before us. And a lot of it is going to be oral.
I'd like to say also, you know, I couldn't go through a lot of things before I came here. It's impossible. I could go through a lot of it, but I won't tell you a lot of why. But I was, you know, looking, I saw The Voice, and I was thinking about, when, you know, about getting people's stories or getting people to say things and everything. For years, we kept saying, please send us some stories. Please send stories in. Let us hear from you. Let us hear from you. And we wouldn't, you know, addicts just don't want to write down a lot of their stories, you know, for a long time. And all of a sudden, it was like everybody starting to write all kinds of things. But for a long time, it was hard for them to do.
Yeah, very hard. But I think also that there's going to be some good taste. I mean, you know, God willing, I'm still some oral things come out. And, for instance, we have, you know, probably an uncomfortable situation. There was an exposure made here about a conspiracy. You know, and I think it'll probably find its way into the books, but I don't think they're going to put, so-and-so was the hatchet man, and they hooked up with yada, yada, yada. No, it's going to be a mention, and, you know, and that's it. You know, and nobody in their right mind is going to talk about so-and-so rode by the house and shot at so-and-so, because then they might ride by their house and drop a few bullets. So I think it's going to be all done in a tasteful manner. I don't think we have anything to fear. I think we can go forth in a loving, caring way. And we have to lay all our shit on the table, so to speak, you know. Otherwise, we might as well all put our hats on and go home. Because if we're gonna do tainted stuff, forget it. I don't want to be a part of it. I'd go get back on a plane right now, you know. And so I think it's all got to be here. It's all got to be said. All has to be put out in a right and righteous manner, you know.
Since I was the one that used the term, I think I better just respond to that. There is a very definite definition for oral history, and there's a very definite definition for written history. We are in the process in our own community that I belong to of writing the history of our founder. And fortunately, we have what I'm sure that the fellowship is capable of having now, of employing an objective historian to write Jimmy's story, rather than it be written by someone in the fellowship who could always be accused of being subjective. But if it is an objective historian, then he knows how to put footnotes and put things in the back of the book, and to write it really as history, sifting through hearsay from oral history. That's why it is so critical that the few people who are alive, who know what was going on in the mid-40s and the early 50s, before they all die out, that they be taped and their brains picked. Because once they die, then it becomes kind of like hearsay, and it has to be mentioned that this is hearsay. So I'm glad that this is going on some tape to say that the conscience of the group, this vast worldwide group now, this swell from the ground up, would be demanding to learn more about our prophets and writing our Bible and writing our songs. And that's really true. And it should be done soon. Not wait for somebody 100 years from now who will fearlessly write what we were afraid to say. But the truth does make us free. And who's afraid of the truth? Well, we're not afraid of it. And that almost proves the miracle that God is behind it. You ought to hear some of the early history of AA. That's locked in the archives. So we should be ashamed of nothing, except it sings the praises of Jimmy Moore, that he held on and held on in spite of all this. So I'm just hoping that somehow we do employ a real historian to do it, who isn't afraid and knows professionally how to go about it. I have, it's 2 minutes to one, and somebody's supposed to grab me at 1 o'clock, and I haven't eaten yet.
Well, I just want to say one thing, Father, that it's nice to have someone from the outside to kind of, you know, but actually, it's the people in the program. You know what I'm saying, Father? Only the people in the program know how to word and say exactly what the feelings are of what has actually happened. I can't quite get into that. How do you feel, Bill?
That would always be challenging.
I think that
there's probably a historian amongst the 12-step fellowship somewhere. And I'm saying that broadly. I mean, it may not be NA or OA, but somewhere in the 12-step fellowship, there's probably one of those people.
Who knows how to write history.
Yeah. That understands the whole...
He does all the research, gets it all there, and he knows how to separate the garbage as you play.
Just so he doesn't leave all the cussing out.
That's it. Down to the bottom line. Lunchtime. Adios.
It is time up, ass.